Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Soccer Morning. Here we go. We got to get all our settings right and the knobs in the right direction and all of those things. And then we can start having ourselves a soccer show. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Very happy to have you here on a Wednesday Soccer Morning. We're going to talk to Ross Dunbar, DW Sports, a gentleman who covers the Bundesliga for a couple of outlets, including Fox Soccer. And we'll get from him some thoughts on the beginning of the Bundesliga season, some of the bigger storylines that are happening over in Germany, including the situation with Kevin De Bruyne, the situation with Fabian Johnson, which is a very much of interest to American soccer fans, the situation with Andrew Wooten, maybe? I don't know. Maybe Ross will have some insight on Andrew Wooten getting a call up to the U.S. men's national team. Certainly that's been reported over in Germany as the U.S. gets ready for a couple of friendlies here in the month of September. All right, so here we go. We got a big rundown of stories to get to in just a second. Also remind you guys that we are taking phone calls later in the show, so get that ready. 646-832-3909, that's the number, right? Just put it in there, and don't hit send yet, but when we're ready, I'll tell you, and you can hit send. We've got some news on some American topics, certainly, in addition to the usual international roundup. Let's start with the UEFA Champions League. Manchester United comes back from a goal down against Club Brugge at Old Trafford and wins 3-1. Memphis Depay, the star of the show, the signing from the Netherlands and wearing the number 7, makes a big statement in a Manchester United shirt with a couple of goals. And Manchester United takes a big advantage at home against Club Brugge in the first leg of the playoff in the qualifiers there in the UEFA Champions League. Lazio takes a 1-0 lead in their first leg against Bayer Leverkusen. Maybe talk about Leverkusen's chances of making the group stages with Ross Dunbar as well. Bate 1-0 over Partizan. Sporting Lisbon 2-1 over CSKA Moscow. So you've got a bunch of home winners there. There was, I believe, maybe one more game. What did I miss, Trevor? I definitely missed maybe Astana over Apoel Nicosia. That's a 1-0 winner for Astana. So I believe that's the only game. Yeah, that's the only game I didn't have there. Arsenal product and U.S. Youth International, Gedeon Zalalem, he was going on loan. To Rangers in the second division in Scotland. You obviously know Rangers having to try to come back up to the Scottish Premier League after financial problems the last couple of seasons. This will be an opportunity for Zalalem to play. The report from The Guardian is that this is a loan until January with an option to extend it for the full season. It has also been reported as a full season loan, so we shall see. People who are more familiar with the situation at Rangers have indicated that he's likely to get over the full year as many as 30 starts. So that would be a big step forward for a player who needs to be taking a senior level step at some point very, very soon. The United States is in Group A of the CONCACAF Olympic qualifying with Canada, Panama, and Cuba. That qualifying tournament begins in October. Obviously, you remember that the United States failed to qualify for the 2012 Olympics in London. They lost to Canada 2-0 and then drew with El Salvador 3-3 under Caleb Porter and were unable to get out of the group and make it to the Olympics. This is a targeted tournament for U.S. soccer and Jurgen Klinsmann, so we should expect a very strong group of players called up depending on how this fits in with international windows and clubs willing to release players. Trevor, there's not an international window at that point, is there? Right there in that October? Because obviously the United States plays Mexico on October 10th, which I'm assuming is in a FIFA window. I don't think there's a window at the beginning of October leading up to that game. So this is going to be, as always, a difficult process for the head coach, in this case Andy Herzog, to get teams to release players he needs to go qualify for the Olympics. The LA Galaxy romped over Comunicaciones in the CONCACAF Champions League last night, 5-0. You got Robbie Keane scoring goals, the gifts being given to the Galaxy who found it easy going on a sandy pitch there at the StubHub Center. There's a window from October 5th to 13th, but the qualifying tournament actually starts before that. But perhaps there won't be a lot of conflict, or perhaps these they can get some of these players released for that. All right. So also with the CONCACAF Champions League, Querétaro held to a goalless draw by Virtus FC in Belize. Remember, Belize had to earn its way back to hosting some Champions League games with stadium issues and the like. Also, Tigres, 2-1 winners over Metapan at home in Mexico. Real Madrid has completed the signing of Inter midfielder Mateo Kovacic. The 21-year-old Croatian, signs a 6-year deal to play for the Spanish Giants. He joins a very crowded midfield and will likely be a reserve player this year. This is a rich-get-richer situation. Can't turn down Real Madrid. And yet you wonder if Kovacic is really best suited or best served playing for Real Madrid and sitting behind some other players for the time being. He does have the opportunity to learn behind Luka Modric, his countryman. Chelsea is making a late bid to grab Barcelona winger Pedro. Of course, he has been long linked to Manchester United this summer. I don't know where this stands at the exact moment. You constantly see these headlines that say swooping, swooping, hijacking, swooping. But lots of sources indicating that Chelsea is now the front runner as opposed to Manchester United. But it's not necessarily that Manchester United is being beaten to the signature of Pedro, etc., but that Manchester United may have decided they don't want him at this point. Of course, you have some options within the Manchester United team. They've started relatively well, although not necessarily overly convincing in the Barclays Premier League. They do have players like Yanazai, who if they decide not to sell, because he is certainly the target of several teams around Europe, could play the same sort of role as Pedro, clearly not as experienced and not necessarily the complete player that Pedro is. But there is an opportunity there for Yanazai to step into the same role. And Manchester United to save the money that they might have spent on Pedro. Chelsea apparently have agreed to pay a fee of 28 million euros or nearly 20 million pounds with a further couple of million add-ons, according to sources there in Europe, as he leaves Barcelona, perhaps not because he wants to, because he needs to, and playing time is something he would like to get somewhere. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll grab Ross Dunbar. We'll get his name correct, and we'll talk to him about the Bundesliga. It's Soccer Morning on WorldSoccerTalk.com. Don't go anywhere. Be right back. Facing the crowd, you're talking too loud. The race to win the MLS Supporter Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from six of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com. This Sunday is the Battle of DPs as Steven Gerrard, Andrea Pirlo, Giovanni Dos Santos, Frank Lampard, and Robbie Keane battle it out in a clash between the LA Galaxy and New York City FC. I'll be calling the game on Rabble.tv, and I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the 90 minutes at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast? Call one of your team's games. It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern for LA Galaxy versus New York City FC on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
All right, here we go. We're going to talk a little Bundesliga. Season is now underway. Our friend Ross Dunbar, you can follow him on Twitter at RossDunbar93, is on the line with us now. He works for Fox Soccer and DW Sports. Hi, Ross.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. All right, so the Bundesliga season is underway. We got an opportunity to see exactly how things may go in terms of the best team in the league, because Bayern Munich opened up their season with an absolute romp over Hamburg. Is that, you know, that's a function of certainly Hamburg, but Bayern Munich's just going to be, yeah, they're going to be irresistible again this year.
Yeah, I think it'll probably be a procession again for them. I think what was interesting actually was that Hamburg actually defended quite well. I mean, we expect Bayern to play kind of short passes in and around the penalty box. Hamburg actually stuffed them out for about half an hour of the game, and it was only when they resorted to the long ball that they were actually quite effective. So that probably shows that maybe they have to do a little bit of work tinkering the team. But I was really impressed with Douglas Costa. I was a little bit sceptical of that transfer initially, but I thought he was magnificent, and his cross for Thomas Müller's goal was absolutely exquisite. And yeah, it's just a shame that it might be a one-horse race, but I think other teams have shown potential as well in the first weekend.
Okay, so give me a couple of those teams who showed some potential for you, and whether or not there'll be a challenge at the top, there will be some intrigue, at least you know, in that second tier.
Well, I thought Dortmund were absolutely fantastic. I mean, I must admit, I didn't expect that at all, but the manner of the performance I thought that just the preparation of the way they played was really good. I mean, normally last year with Dortmund, they were aggressive and they were quick, and they tried all the ideas that Klopp had done years before, but when they had the ball, they were really wasteful and they were punting the ball long. It was like watching a mid-table English team at times. But with Tuchel, I thought they were excellent on the ball, and especially against a team like Gladbach, who, you know, let's not forget, even though they lost 4-0, but this is probably one of the best defensive teams in Europe. I mean, it's not a poor side. So if Dortmund, I think, for one, will have a good season. I'm not sure whether they're going to be title challengers, to be honest, but, you know, they should be impressive to watch. Leverkusen, very impressive again in the second half on Saturday, I thought. Good squad depth. They've brought in Charles Aranguiz, who's the Chilean national team player, and I think that's a great signing, and potentially they could be the second force this year. Unfortunately, while we're talking about teams who can compete, Wolfsburg were really poor at the weekend, and I think the Kevin De Bruyne saga is really beginning to have a bad effect on the team.
Okay, so Wolfsburg won, but maybe not convincing, but they won. You mentioned Dortmund and their convincing win over Gladbach, so give me a sense of whether or not this is an indication that Gladbach's going to take a step back, and then I'll ask you about the American at Gladbach and his injury.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple of things with Gladbach. Obviously, they've lost Christoph Kramer, who had a fantastic loan spell there, played in the World Cup final, as we know. He's a massive player for them. They lost him as he went back to Leverkusen. Max Kruse, the striker, went to Wolfsburg. He was very important because of his link-up play. And they've obviously brought in a few players, Lars Stindl and Josip Drimic, and I just don't think either of them are of the same quality. So I think that's going to have a bad effect on their season. Also, the demands of the Champions League, not just the fact that they've got to play weekend fixtures throughout the season, but I think just the intensity of the Champions League and the pressure of a big traditional club like Gladbach being back in the European Cup is a massive thing for them. I would say that they'll probably finish outside of the Champions League positions this year, but it's early days so far.
Okay, well, I mean, obviously they had a stellar season last year under Lucien Favre. Is he going to be the guy? You think he's going to stick around for the full season if they have some struggles fighting on multiple fronts? Is he the kind of guy that could either choose to leave or that the club would actually decide to turn over?
Well, it's interesting because obviously what's happening at Bayern Munich it certainly may have an effect on that, because from what you read and what you would gather, Lucien Favre is one of the names who potentially domestically could step into that job. I don't know if that's really true or not, but I think there's a sense of realism around Borussia Mönchengladbach. They're not going to fire Lucien Favre, given what he's done for this club. When he took over, they were bottom of the league. You know, this was a team that had Marco Reus, and they could have got relegated. And it's amazing to see them finish fourth, get back into the Champions League. So I think they might have a difficult season, but you know, I think there's a sense of realism there, and I don't think they'll pull the trigger on Favre this season.
One of the United States national team's best players is at Gladbach. It's Fabian Johnson. He had a stellar World Cup last year. He's obviously an important player for Jurgen Klinsmann going forward. One of the coups in terms of the dual internationals that Jurgen Klinsmann has brought in, whether or not he would have ever been a German player, a Germany player, is sort of beyond the point. He certainly helped the U.S. And now he's injured. This comes at a difficult time for the United States as they get ready for a very important game in early October. But what does it mean for Gladbach?
Well, I was at the game on Saturday at Dortmund, and to be honest, it wasn't that impressive. But I think that was probably an effect of the team in general. I think you know, the sort of player that Fabian Johnson is, he needs the kind of room into. He's a really quick player. He can get on the wing, get a couple of crosses in, but he didn't really play to his strengths. He played a lot through the middle. Obviously, he picked up an injury after the game, played for 90 minutes, and he's probably going to be out for a few months. That's a disappointment, obviously, for him, because he'll probably miss the Champions League first few match days, which I think if you're a Gladbach player and you've put a lot of effort to get there, that's going to be a massive blow for him. And, of course, if he's not available for the U.S. national team, then I think that's a blow for Klinsmann as well.
You mentioned, okay, let's talk about Leverkusen, because they lose, and then they go into the Champions League qualifying round, and they lose on the road, but they lose the first leg of that tie. Are they going to be able to turn that around?
I think they've got the quality to do so. I mean, I thought last night they were quite good. I thought they created chances. They had a goal chopped off for offside, which has caused a little bit of confusion. But I think overall they genuinely do have the attacking quality to turn that game around next week. I think what would be a concern is someone like Heung-Min Son, the South Korean attacking midfielder, who's not been as impressive. And in the two games so far, they've had to rely on substitutes to make the difference. Julian Brandt, 19 years old, is probably one of the brightest talents in German football right now. Certainly one player I think people should keep an eye out for. Admir Mehmedi's came in, the Swiss striker, and he's made a difference as well. So I think it will be tough, certainly against the Lazio team, who stereotypically will be very pragmatic about this sort of game. But I think they may have enough to turn it around, yeah.
All right, as I said, we're one match day into the season. Bayern Munich was fantastic on their opening weekend, despite the fact, as you said, Hamburg actually played reasonably good defensive football. Dortmund is impressive. I got a couple of teams who did fail to impress, including Gladbach. Let's talk about underdogs. The small teams that everybody loves to root for, especially in a league where there are some established big clubs. Ross, give me a sense of what we can expect out of somebody, I don't know, like Darmstadt, who's coming up for the first time in over 30 years.
I think the problem with teams that come up from the Zweite Bundesliga, and it's the same probably with the Championship and the Premier League in England, is that there's a novelty factor about these clubs. They will just run themselves into the ground week in, week out. And we saw that in the first weekend of the season. Darmstadt were at home to Hanover. They've got a really old football ground. I mean, if anyone is in Germany and they want to visit a really old-fashioned football stadium, that's the one you should go for. And the atmosphere was great, a lot of passion, a lot of really intensive football. But defensively, they were quite poor, and Hanover came back and got a point out of that game. And with Ingolstadt, it was quite an impressive result against a fairly established team like Mainz. They won 1-0. I think both teams will probably get relegated this year again. I just think the when you're up against teams like Hertha Berlin and Hamburg and Stuttgart and Cologne, I think it's very difficult for teams who have a very small budget to compete. I mean, especially a team like Darmstadt. I mean, we shouldn't forget that 2 years ago they could have been relegated to the fourth division. It was only a financial boo from one of the clubs that stopped them from going down to the fourth tier. So I mean, their rise is something quite extraordinary.
Yeah, let's just briefly here, since you bring that up, you know, we've seen, I mean, obviously the story with Elche in Spain got a lot of headlines last year, and it kept Eibar in the first division there. But the sense is, and this has been the praise heaped on Germany for the last couple of years now, is that while the rest of the footballing world has gone mad with debt and spending and all of these things, Germany has been financially responsible, that they have the 50+1 rule, and that this is the model for everybody else. Is it as good as that? Is it as glowing as that?
I'm not sure it's as simplistic as that. I think it depends where you look, perhaps. I mean, I think certainly from an international standpoint, if you look at a team like Borussia Dortmund, who obviously turned themselves around over 10 years and played the sort of football that they did, it's easy to make that kind of assertion about the whole league, but there's so many different facets. I mean, look at a team like Schalke, for example, massive club in Germany. I don't think people in certainly the English-speaking world understand how big a club Schalke actually is. And they are crippled with debt. They are absolutely crippled with debt. You're seeing a lot of clubs, spinning off their football organisations. Obviously, Germany, a lot of the clubs are run by member organisations. A lot of clubs are spinning off those organisations into actual companies on the stock market. Things like Hamburg, for example. Hamburg are about 150 million euros in debt. They've spent a lot of money. Stuttgart are in debt. One other aspect, I think, if you go further down the league, is that a lot of the teams from the former East Germany are crippled with debt as well. A lot of clubs took loans in the 1990s, obviously high rates, and that's why you kind of see a lot of these East German teams struggling to compete in the second league and in the third division. So I don't think it's as simple. I think German football has had bad experiences with spending. I mean, in the late 90s, they had the collapse of the broadcasting contract, which I think would have a massive effect in any country. So I think they've learned their lessons, but I don't think it's as simple as financial prudency rather than, you know, being reckless.
Well, and again, we come to, you know, that everything is relative in the big European leagues. We talk about La Liga. There are three teams that can actually win that title right now, which is one more than usual with Atletico Madrid putting together another solid team that can challenge. In England, we know there's four or five, and that's considered wide open. In Germany, there's really one team that's going to, that we can expect to win the title with. Maybe if Bayern Munich slips up, there's a chance somebody could pip in there. And we've seen Dortmund do it in recent past. But really, the strength of Germany is supposed to be the quality all the way up and down the league, right? So is there, is that something that Germany can actually exploit in relation to some of these other leagues, and as they take a position of prominence in Europe? I don't even know what I'm asking necessarily, Ross. I'm just, Germany is both at the same time uncompetitive and very competitive.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, the problem is that the game has developed so much over such a short space of time. When I first started watching German football, it was in a decade where you had Werder Bremen, who won the championship. You had Stuttgart, who won the championship. You had Dortmund, who won the championship. So even in the last sort of 10, 15 years, there's been a lot of different teams who have had success. You have had teams like Schalke, who have finished second. You have had teams like Stuttgart, who have been up there as well. Dortmund, Gladbach, whatever. So there are a lot of teams who have a bit of strength, but the reality is that Bayern Munich have pulled away quite significantly over the last few years. I think it's only realistic to say that. And I think European football reflects that nowadays, that there are one or two teams who have that kind of dominance. Unfortunately, I remember speaking to one sporting director in Germany, and he said that really the reality is that you expect Bayern Munich to win the league, but if they slip up, then you have to be ready to capitalise on that. And I think that's kind of the reality of the Bundesliga this year. You'd have to see a mighty implosion from Bayern Munich for them not to win the championship.
Yes, as we get, it's that, as you said, things have changed, the game has changed, the money at the top level has become so immense. It's almost as if you were, Bayern Munich's always been a a massive club, and certainly they were the club positioned best to take advantage of all of the new money that's come into the game, and the exponential growth for those clubs. And in England, it was, it was Manchester United and certainly Chelsea with a big influx, amount of spending on Abramovich's part. So we've seen sort of these clubs become super clubs over time. But again, we want to focus on the rest of the league and talk about what it has to offer. I guess as we move forward, and there's a question on Twitter here, which I'm not sure you'll have a lot of insight into, Ross, but there is a notion that Germany has not yet figured out a way, the Bundesliga has not yet figured out a way to exploit the American market, which is bringing a lot of money into the Premier League. And they just re-upped with NBC Sports here for 6 more years, and it's across all their platforms. They're showing every single game, making every game available to American soccer fans. Is there a chance Germany can do, the Bundesliga can do something in that vein? And how do they make their game more popular, especially in the English-speaking world?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point, because I think the Premier League has cornered a lot of the, you know, the kind of globalized world. I mean, if you were trying to break into the Asian market, for example, you probably wouldn't have a chance, because the English clubs have got such a stranglehold over that market. I think there is potential for German football to break into the American market, but it depends really what institutions want when they try to break into these markets. Do they want to just make a lot of money, or do they want to actually grow a long-term fan base? Because I think over the short term, the reality is that German football probably isn't going to make masses of money from American spectators. I don't think that's really going to happen. But you're probably looking at it over maybe a 5 to 10 year kind of period, whether they can actually have a kind of, you know, a genuine committed fan base in the US. Because, yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to make money in the short term from these kind of projects. The Premier League has taken a long time to have that kind of financial boost. So I think it's got potential, but I think maybe what puts a lot of people off is if Bayern Munich are winning the league by 25, 30 points every season, and I don't think that's healthy for the league at all.
Yeah,
I mean, if you look at the history, I think if you look at the history of German football since the Bundesliga, no team has won the league more than 3 years in a row. This would be the first time in about 50 years that a team would have that kind of dominance over 4 years, and I think that would be a worrying trend for the German league. But unfortunately, you know, I think a lot of fans find the issue that the league is out of touch with supporters. I mean, there's been a lot of things this weekend, a lot of protests about Monday night matches potentially scheduled in the Bundesliga to try and commercialise the league to compete with England, and that's not very popular. So I think there's still a long way to go in that regard.
Do you think that there is some level of competition that between England and the Bundesliga, and that these are two leaderships who are actually, I'll say this way, programming against each other? Because, you know, obviously England's played a Friday match, which has traditionally been a spot for the Bundesliga. We saw Bayern Munich open up against Hamburg on Friday. Manchester United played Aston Villa, I believe, was the game. And I saw some people on Twitter sort of openly wondering if the Premier League was putting that game in that slot to go up against the Bundesliga and try to grab attention away from what could potentially be their biggest rival in terms of global popularity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you look at it from either situation, I mean, these are, you know, massive capitalist organisations. They want to compete against each other. And when you look at the way that Richard Scudamore has run the Premier League over the last decade or whatever, you know, he's a bit of a no-nonsense character. And, you know, if he has to make decisions that maybe are unpopular to get the best out of the Premier League, then he will do that. I think the DFL, the organisation who is in charge of the Bundesliga, has already said that, you know, it will make decisions to try and bridge that gap with the Premier League. I mean, unfortunately, I think the reality is that nothing is going to compete with the Premier League right now. It's going to take a long time to build that gap. I read one interesting article last night that compared the English Premier League to the NBA and its dominance, and how it maybe is the European Super League that we all feared. Maybe the English Premier League in itself is actually the European Super League now. I don't know if that's true or not, but right. I think it's going to be difficult for the Bundesliga to bridge that gap whilst not turning off the local supporters, because, you know, one of the biggest attractions about German football is the attendances, the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I was at the Dortmund game on Saturday, and it was a fantastic atmosphere. The energy inside that stadium was nothing like I had experienced in the UK. So that's a big selling point, but if you run for the money, then you might lose that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the calculus being done by a lot of these leagues as they consider how to be successful while at the same time not necessarily losing their roots. I mean, you know, we've seen Spain playing games. Now, it looks, being up, you know, starting things late is a Spanish tradition, a Spanish cultural thing, but they're playing these games so late because what? They're trying to maximize the Asian market. That's just very cynical. A very cynical way to run the sport, Ross. But that leads me to the question about the Super League, any conceivable Super League. And maybe this is the wrong way to ask it, and this is really tough, but in the end, would the Bundesliga, maybe not necessarily in terms of its global profile or the popularity of the sport or how much money these clubs could make, but the basic purity of the football, would the Bundesliga be better off if Bayern Munich left for some European Super League and everybody else was left to just play for titles within Germany?
No, I'm not sure. I don't think it would be. I think actually the Bundesliga has had some benefits of Bayern Munich being so strong in the Champions League. I mean, Bayern Munich have been in 3 Champions League finals in 5 years. Borussia Dortmund have been in the Champions League finals. So actually, it's a bit of a paradox, because actually the Bundesliga needs Bayern Munich to be very strong in Europe. It needs to compete in the latter rounds of the Champions League. But at the same time, it's a catch-22 situation, because if they're so strong in the Champions League, then they win the Bundesliga by 10, 15 points every season. So really what the Bundesliga needs is to encourage teams like Dortmund and Schalke and Gladbach and Wolfsburg, obviously, maybe not a traditional club, but they've got money, to actually compete. And I think we've seen that in the past. I mean, it's only been the last 2 or 3 seasons that's not really happened. So I'm not sure it would be better off without Bayern Munich. And unfortunately, the European Super League thing is something that is still palpable. You still think that it could happen eventually, but I don't know whether it would be in the interest of Bayern Munich to make that happen. Okay. And actually, to be honest, I think you have publicly dismissed that idea. I think it would probably be better for countries that maybe are a bit smaller, like Holland and Scotland and Portugal and all that kind of thing, rather than, you know, your top 5 leagues in Europe.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go back to Wolfsburg and talk about Kevin De Bruyne, because the twist in this saga, and of course he is a target of Manchester City, and whether or not he leaves, I'm not sure. We'll get to that, but there is this twist in which he was at the Sports Bild Awards and was, now German not his first language, he was sort of what tricked into to saying he was going to stay, or tricked into an oath of loyalty. Exactly what happened there?
he was collecting his award, and the moderator kind of nudged him towards the issue, and I think he asked, I mean, if I remember watching the video, I think he asked maybe 3 or 4 times, and he was getting a bit repetitive, and Kevin De Bruyne came back in his kind of broken German and said that he would play Wolfsburg this season, which is interesting, because to be honest, having interviewed him a few times before, I'm not sure he's bothered whether he plays in England or Germany. I don't think it's a massive issue to him personally. I think what would be the stumbling block is whether Wolfsburg want to sell him, because, you know, this is a club that's bankrolled by Volkswagen. It doesn't matter whether Man City offer 60 million or 70 million. They don't need to sell him. And if they do sell him, they're essentially surrendering second place, because as we saw at the weekend, this is a team that really functions with a player of that star quality. And if he's not there, then I don't think they're of the same quality going into the Champions League either.
It's interesting. That's certainly one of the factors here. I find it fascinating that this is a player who, you know, was with an English club, and you know, I guess the general belief is that he didn't get a fair shake at Chelsea, and that's why it's okay for him to go back to the Premier League, and he'll find. I know he's improved as a player. Don't get me wrong. I know he's one of the best players in the Bundesliga last year, so that certainly speaks to his quality. But I don't know how many players like him would get this early in their career would get another opportunity to go back to England out, and especially considering the fee involved is going to be significant.
Yeah. I think that's the thing with going to Chelsea, is that we see this with so many players, that they go to Chelsea thinking, okay, I'm going to break into Mourinho's first team, but that's really difficult. I mean, Mourinho rarely goes away from his regular 15, 16 players. You know, he's not going to, you see with Mohamed Salah, for example, and Cuadrado and all these players who have gone to Chelsea, that they find the same problems as De Bruyne, and, you know, people accuse him of not working hard enough. To be honest, my impressions of him are that he's very hardworking. I think he's very determined. I think he's got that little bit of aggression on the pitch, and you see that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he's definitely improved since he came to Germany. He had a fantastic loan spell at Werder Bremen. That was really the first time that we saw him play competitive football in one of the top leagues. He went back to Chelsea, had a few games, but then went to Wolfsburg, and he's been outstanding since then. I genuinely think he'd be a magnificent signing for any English club right now. I think he's probably one of the most complete playmakers in Europe right now. And yeah, I mean, it's going to cost a lot, and I think that will be the biggest barrier from Manchester City, is whether they can convince Wolfsburg to sell him. I think they'll sell him eventually, because, you know, they've already said publicly that they might sell him within the next 12 months. But I think most people would expect him to go to Bayern Munich if they sell him in 12 months' time, which I'm not sure if that's a great development for the Bundesliga if, you know, Bayern Munich signed the best player from the second force again. I mean,
they keep doing that. They need to stop doing that. Very quickly here, has there been any talk within Germany? I mean, money talks. And when Bayern Munich comes and offers you a big check, and especially if you're a club that has to service some debt or just needs to build from the bottom up a little bit, or certainly could use a big check from Bayern Munich to go buy 3, 4, 5 players to strengthen your squad. But has there been any talk about, I would call it collusion. Certainly, like the rest of the Bundesliga sort of looking at their situation and going, we can't keep selling our best players to Bayern Munich. We'll never have a shot then.
Yeah, but then if you don't sell to Bayern Munich, then you have to sell to the Premier League.
Sure.
Yeah, so I mean, it doesn't really matter what you do. I mean, unfortunately, if you're a team maybe in the mid-table of the Bundesliga, you're part of this European football food chain where, unfortunately, you're going to get eaten up by the biggest teams. I think this is something that we've seen over the last 10, 15 years with Bayern Munich. They will strategically sign the best players of other teams. Actually, I read an interesting article this week about Mario Götze's transfer from Borussia Dortmund, and one of the accusations of Bayern Munich was that they signed this player just to weaken the opposition, which I'm not sure if that's 100% true, but you kind of see the kind of thought process of Bayern Munich that actually, while we're signing a player of that quality, they're also weakening their opposition. And I think the thing with De Bruyne is that, you know, I'm not sure whether he's that fussed about going to Man City or to staying at Wolfsburg or going to Bayern Munich, but I think if you have the option of staying at Wolfsburg for one more season and playing in the Champions League and then maybe going to Bayern Munich, I think that's quite an easy decision to make, probably, for a player who's been in Germany for a year and a half.
All right, Ross, let me finish with this briefly. This is not Bundesliga. This is actually down in the second division. But Andrew Wooten, a striker at Sandhausen, has reportedly been added to Jurgen Klinsmann's roster for a couple of friendlies coming up in September. He's 25. He's never really gotten a full look with the U.S. national team. Do you know much about this player? And you know, is he the type of striker who, I suppose, could score goals on the international level, again, considering that the United States is not in the strongest confederation in the world?
Yeah, well, Sandhausen are absolutely banging them in the moment in the second division. It's quite hilarious to watch. I mean, they thrashed Paderborn 6-0 at the weekend. I mean, Paderborn were the team who got relegated last season, so, I mean, that's quite an extraordinary result. And Sandhausen, if they got promoted, would be, you know, much smaller than Paderborn, much smaller than Darmstadt. It would be something quite ridiculous. With Andrew Wooten, he's been around the second division for a while. I think he was at Kaiserslautern before. From what I've seen, he's quite a powerful kind of wide forward. He's not really a centre forward as such. I saw Paderborn's goals at the weekend there, and he looks more of a kind of powerful wide player, not a winger as such, but somebody who could score goals from that position. He was named as Kicker's player of the match day 2 weeks running, so that's quite impressive. And I think, like you said, I mean, if they play against maybe weaker teams in the Confederation, I think he could do a job. And I think from Klinsmann's point of view, it's not bad to have players who are doing so well in a competitive league to have in your national team pool.
Yeah, you mentioned that he may not be a center forward. He may be a, you know, sort of big, powerful, wider forward, and that's not necessarily what the U.S. needs at this point. We're pretty desperate for center forwards over here, Ross. So I don't know if Klinsmann will try to transition him. I mean, we certainly have seen Terrence Boyd, who may be more classically a center forward in the U.S. setup, and he's got. Do you know where he is right now? I know he's. I'm not club wise. I know he's with Red Bull Leipzig, but in terms of his health, do you have any idea on Terrence Boyd?
I'm not sure about his current health, but he hasn't been playing. I mean, they've signed a lot of expensive strikers, and I think they've got 5 or 6 other options than Terrence Boyd. So I think he's got a little bit to go yet.
By the way, what happens if Leipzig goes all the way up and makes the Bundesliga next year? Is there a protest? what happens?
I think we can all cry.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that you've seen even in the second division a lot of these traditional clubs with really aggressive supporters have actually tried to attack the team hotel, attack the team bus, all that kind of thing. I think that would intensify a lot if they got promoted, and that's not really a good thing for the Bundesliga.
Well, you actually reminded me that there was a bus shot. Whose bus was it? Hertha Berlin's bus was shot at before a cup match. What was what was the situation there? And I mean, that's not the kind of thing I associate. I mean, look, there are certainly very passionate fans in Germany, and they're as likely to go overboard as anybody. But that's not something I would associate with Germany normally.
No, I've not seen any kind of fallout from that story. I just remember seeing it last week, or 2 weeks ago in the cup weekend, and I can't remember who they were playing necessarily, but the team bus was shot at, and yeah, it's the sort of thing you would associate maybe with Turkish football or something like that, but not really in Germany. And Yeah, I mean, I think what you're seeing is there is a kind of fan problem there. I mean, you see a lot of fan groups that are quite militant in their approach. Even the bigger clubs have this problem as well. And I don't think it's a positive development, but it's something that the authorities will find very difficult to contain.
They were on their way to a first round tie with Arminia Bielefeld. I can't pronounce German, so there you go. maybe one day in the future, Ross, and I'll see if Trevor can book this. We'll have you back, and we'll have a discussion about the political situation in Europe and how it impacts German football, because that's something I'm always interested in. Certainly, we've seen some of these far right groups attach themselves to the game, and that's certainly not something anybody wants to see. Ross Dunbar, Fox Soccer, DW Sports. Follow him on Twitter at RussDunbar93. Ross, appreciate the time and the insight. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
No bother. Thanks for having me again.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll open the phone line to talk to you on a Wednesday. A couple of interesting items in the news. It's Soccer Morning, WorldSoccerTalk.com. Be right back. The race to win the MLS Supporter Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from six of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com. This Sunday is the Battle of DPs as Steven Gerrard, Andrea Pirlo, Giovanni Dos Santos, Frank Lampard, and Robbie Keane battle it out in a clash between the LA Galaxy and New York City FC. I'll be calling the game on Rabble.tv, and I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the 90 minutes at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast? Call one of your team's games. It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern for LA Galaxy versus New York City FC on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Soccer Morning Wednesday's program. Let's open up those phone lines. 646-832-3909 is the phone number. I got a couple of things we can talk about here in the call-in portion of the program. Anything that's already been discussed, including all of those German topics, certainly open. Here you go. Fabian Johnson missed some time. That's a big blow to Gladbach, but certainly a big blow to the U.S. men's national team as well. We've also got the Champions League, which is underway. It's Champions League-like stuff, not exactly the group stages, but it's still something. Gedeon Zalalem. Now, this is the update. I did the news at 9:05 that Gedeon Zalalem there had been a loan agreed with Rangers in Scotland. But I'm now seeing that there is actually a report out there. Several other teams are interested, and that it may not be Rangers in the end. Rangers face anxious wait over Arsenal kid Gedeon Zalalem as trio of English sides weigh up move for Ibrox target. That's the headline of the Daily Record. Quite the headline. The teams reportedly interested in Zalalem include Fulham, Charlton, and Birmingham City. I think I would be better with a English championship move than a Scottish championship move for a couple of reasons. I have a better league, first of all, and that's better competition. Now, again, all of this, caveat, he's got to play. He's got to play. And as I said, if he ends up at Rangers, there are people saying that even if they've got a lot of, even if they got a pretty good midfield there, they are the second division, he would get 30 starts, 40 starts. Maybe not that many, but 30 at least. If he goes to Fulham, Charlton, or Birmingham City, would he get starts? Would he get a lot of playing time? Is that something we can imagine right now? I just read a piece over at Top Drawer Soccer yesterday sort of asking questions about Emerson Hyman's situation at Fulham, as he has turned down contract extension after contract extension, does not seem to be in their plans, despite the manager's plans, despite the fact that they have offered him a new contract, and he may be on his way out. And I'm not saying that there's a connection between Hyman and Zalalem, but if Hyman, who played pretty well to start the championship campaign last year, can't get back into that team and start, are we positive that Zalalem would step into a team like Fulham and get a lot of playing time? I don't know. Let's go to Rich in Philly. What's up, Rich?
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Doing well. What's on your mind today?
I was on Twitter this morning, and there was a post that came up of Forbes, most lucrative MLS teams. And
yes.
And it reminded me of an article that yesterday on about MLS ownership, most fans hated. So we hate our ownership, and I know Colorado says they're hating their ownership, and I read yesterday that the Fire fans are having a protest this Saturday about their ownership. Mm-hmm. And always like the same thing every time. Of, you know, why do these owners pay money, or do they have money, or they refuse to pay higher money salaries? And I think the reason why they don't do it is because they were told they don't have to. They were told when they bought MLS team, they were told by MLS, you can own a pro sports franchise, you don't have to pay that much money, or you could have a salary, your whole play salary could be like $2 million, and all you need to do is find some combination of players to work, and you win a championship out of it. So they were told they didn't have to spend money.
Well, it's like, come on, Rich, it's like anything else. Yes, okay, there was sort of this buy-in element to MLS. You buy in, and then you do what you want. I mean, this is true with any other sports league. Let's not paint MLS as overly different. I know single entity gives it a different kind of flavor, but there are plenty of leagues where owners buy teams and then do nothing, and then sit on their hands, and then refuse to spend money. And, you know, maybe they're waiting for the value of the franchise to go up based on the overall success of the league. Maybe they're waiting to be pulled up in terms of value by everybody else, and then they'll sell and get out and make some cash. Or maybe they're just like owning a franchise but don't necessarily want to spend money. I mean, I think that you've got a situation where there are bad owners in every league. And I don't know that we want to paint MLS as any different than any other league. Incompetence and poor management is not necessarily tied to a single entity structure, Rich.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe that's why. Like, you know, a lot of the players, teams like Seattle and LA, they're spending the money. Then you have like my team in Philly and Chicago and Colorado. They don't have to, and they wouldn't. And I was thinking more of the single entity is that they were told. Okay. You can own this pro sports franchise. You don't have to pay much money on it.
Okay, but
you don't really have to do much.
But what you're saying is that they were promised an opportunity to go win a title, despite the fact they're not spending money. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it wouldn't be like other sports where you had to pay the high salaries of players, because it always goes back to who's the teams that in MLS I've seen to win the leagues. It's the teams that don't have the big DPs,
And one of the selling
outside of LA, of course.
One of the selling points for MLS, and one of the things that has allowed it to grow as fast as it has, is that it is one of the less expensive ways to buy into pro sports. I mean, Anthony Precourt wasn't going to be buying an NBA franchise or a Major League Baseball franchise, but he had enough money to buy an MLS franchise. Yeah, this is the bargain bin of sports teams in America. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, the highest value team in the league, I'm looking at the list that you were just talking about that Sean Francis shared on Twitter. It's coming from the Forbes list, which I guess we're going to get later. But the highest value team in MLS is the Seattle Sounders at $245 million. That is one quarter One quarter of what an NBA team goes for these days. I mean, an NBA team goes for, can go for a, I mean, it may be overvalued, I don't know, but an NBA team can go for $1 billion in this day and age. That's, so that tells you where MLS sits in relation to the other sports teams in this country. And it's a different level of owner. I mean, you know, okay, maybe Phil Anschutz has enough money to buy and sell everybody in the NFL, mostly. Maybe a couple other guys have that kind of cash. But for the most part, these guys are, you know, they're groups like what's going on in Kansas City. It's Merritt Paulson, who's a rich guy, but not a super wealthy guy. It's Jay Sugarman, who was doing well, then the market hit him hard, and now he doesn't have the money necessarily to compete with a Seattle or an L.A. And again, I don't know that that's intrinsically a bad thing, but maybe it is. Maybe the growth of MLS will be stunted by the fact that we have these owners who are, you know, again, they're not the upper echelon of wealthy sports team owners in this country. Maybe you're right about the spending.
About guys,
well.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. But what about guys like New England? You know, you have Robert Kraft. He owns the Patriots. He's willing to give money for the Patriots, but it doesn't seem this window to do anything for the refs.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point.
Or, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. I mean, there are certainly some owners who have chosen, despite the fact they have the wherewithal, not to spend. And that makes them look bad. It makes the league look bad, and it pisses off the fans. And as you said, there are ways that MLS gets around some of these issues by creating an environment with parity and a low salary cap and playoffs that allow teams like New England, despite the fact they're not going to spend on the level of the biggest teams or the biggest spenders, to be competitive and go to an MLS Cup final and maybe have a trophy in their case. And that's a selling. That's a selling point for a lot of guys. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I keep going up to you. My bad.
No, it's all right. It's all right. Go ahead.
I said, don't get me wrong. I want the big salaries. I want them to pay the big money. I would love that, especially in Philadelphia. I would love that. But I think that's what's going on. They were told you can do what you don't need to do as much like Kroenke. He owns the Rams and the Nuggets and the Avalanche of Colorado. He pays big money salaries for his players on those teams. He told, I could own this team, not have to do anything, and win a championship. And I could do it with like the pocket change in my car. And I think that's what
that's proving not to be true, isn't it? I mean, isn't it proving not to be true? You can't be skinflint and go win a title in MLS anymore. You can't operate. I mean, the last team to operate on what I would call a budget to win a title is the Rapids. And that was a long time. That seems like a long time ago. Maybe it's not, but it seems like a long time ago. Since then, we've had Galaxy, Sporting Kansas City, who, maybe not the top spenders in the league, but they're certainly not sitting around counting their pennies. I think this is a league that maybe is changing, and that's why Rapid fans are pissed off, because Kroenke hasn't put in the effort and spent the money. And they are, and why Chicago Fire fans are pissed off, that even though Hotman's shown some signs of life with Jermaine Jones and Didier Drogba, but they're still failing to bring in the type of talent necessary to win in this league. I don't know. It's tough, man. It is. It's tough. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Rich.
No problem.
There's Rich. I mean, no conclusions drawn, but yeah, there's some element of it. It's, by the way, the list, and we'll get to Landon here in a second, who wants to talk about Bill Manning leaving Real Salt Lake. This list, it goes in order of the most valuable MLS teams. The Sounders, 245. The Galaxy, 212. These are in millions of dollars. The Dynamo are the third most valuable team in MLS at $200 million. I'm surprised by that. Portland, 185. Toronto, 175. Chicago, 160. At the bottom, there's a bunch of teams in the middle, obviously. At the bottom, the Colorado Rapids, $105 million. And just above them, Real Salt Lake at $108 million. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, they are in a very small market when compared to the rest of the league. And number two, their revenues are small. And that may be because they are in a small market. The revenues actually mentioned here by Forbes. And Real Salt Lake has the third lowest revenue in all of MLS, ahead of only Colorado and San Jose. What's up, Landon?
Hey, Jason. Yeah, first off, just want to give just kind of correction to what you just said there. You said the last team that went MLS Cup on a budget was Colorado. Based on those numbers you just said, it definitely wasn't Colorado. It was us.
When did Colorado win their title?
Oh, 2000. I don't know, to be honest with you.
Well, that's why I said the last one, because you guys won in 2009. I'm pretty sure Colorado.
Oh yeah.
I'm pretty sure Colorado has won 2010, 2011. 2010.
I think it was
yeah.
10. You're right.
There you go.
Yeah, I got this mixed up. You're right.
I win.
So hey, I just want to talk about Bill Manning. What do you think about that?
I think that I would be very concerned about the direction that this team is headed in under Deloy Hanson if I was a Real Salt Lake fan. That's what I think.
Yep. That's about exactly how I feel. I mean, so the trio that I think did really well for us was Kreiss, Lagerwey, and a Manning. And all three of those guys are gone right now, along with half our team. What can a RSL fan look forward to right now? The thing is, it's a completely new team. I don't think Deloy has taken this team in the right direction at all. And the one thing that I thought was really good going forward, they just completely cut him. I'm getting really, really worried about about what they're going to be doing the rest of this season and next season as well.
Yeah, when you see, all right, look, Jason Kreiss, he comes up against a contract. They offer him a contract. I don't know what the numbers were. I can't remember what the reporting was at the time, but clearly it's going to be difficult for them to compete with NYCFC. I don't know that I blame Hanson for that situation. Then Garth Lagerwey comes up against his contract. Now, maybe Garth thought, okay, I had hitched my wagon to Jason Kreiss. He's gone. I really don't have a whole lot of reason to stay. I have an opportunity to go play to go work for a team that's got a lot more resources than RSL. And look, again, that's not necessarily Hanson's fault. The fact that RSL is in a metropolitan area of a million people, and that's small compared to everybody else, and that means your revenue can't match what some of these other clubs are getting. But to lose Manning also, or to say to let Manning go, I guess he'd been working without a contract for a little while, does indicate that this is a complete overhaul of the team. Not just, well, we're going through a transition period and we want to bridge the gap between Kreiss and Kassar, and Garth Lagerwey's moved on, but Weibel will do a fine job. He knows the league. We're talking about complete turnover, and that means that your identity as of what makes RSL has kind of started to fade. I think. Do you feel that? I mean,
exactly.
You still got Beckerman and Morales and some of these other guys, Beltran, but you've seen Grabovoi leave. You've seen, you've seen some players leave that were crucial to those. And look, age is a thing that happens. You can't really blame them necessarily for cutting ties for a player if he's older and costs too much against the cap. But you know what made me fall in love with RSL just as a neutral is kind of all gone.
Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting because my wife and I are talking now because our season tickets are coming up for renewal, and we've been season ticket holders for 3 years now. And we became season ticket holders because we loved it. I mean, the team was amazing. Everyone was doing really well. Well, last year, this year, they upped our season tickets by 40%. And then on top of that, the team is not at all the same that it was when we first started. Completely different team, completely different front office, not playing really well. Yeah, like you said, there's like five or six players, Beckerman and Raimondo, whatnot, who are still on it. But it's a completely different team right now. And we're kind of sitting back saying, hey, is this worth doing it another year? Or we just want to, catch a game once in a while and watch from home? Because, I'm still pretty mad at the front office for jacking those prices up so much when the team definitely did not get 40% better.
There's some realities when it comes to ticket prices. Look, I know there's I know there's sticker
there totally
shock.
Is.
I know there's sticker shock, but sometimes those things are actually justified. Sometimes MLS teams have artificially depressed ticket prices to get people in the door. And yeah, maybe it's not cool to spring it on you, but you know from year to year that your prices your ticket prices are likely to go up on some level.
Oh yeah, no, I get that, and I get up on some level. I'm talking 10 to 15. When it was 40% was a huge hit, and we called into the front office and said, "Hey, I mean, this is huge. What's the reason on this? Is it cost?" And their big thing they said was demand. They said the number one reason we're pushing up is because people want to buy the tickets so well, which makes sense because they were selling out left and right last season.
Yeah.
This season they're not doing near as well filling that stadium. It's been a little bit since we've had a sellout crowd. I mean, it's not doing really well. People are leaving early at the games. I mean, the Portland game was pretty bad. Everyone about, I'd say, probably around 70 minutes, you had probably only less than 3/4 of the stadium still in their seats, which never is that way usually at the RSL game. So Anyways, overall, it's just I'm getting worried with the whole franchise, and it's not doing great. I really don't think we'll probably be renewing our season tickets. Well, this front office is just a mess right now.
Yeah, we'll see what happens and what Hansen does in terms of the restructuring. It's usually better to have, you know, truly local ownership, which Hansen is. It's usually better to have, I don't know what to make of him. I don't know what to make of, because he also has committed to doing things like build that stadium for the USL team, which I don't know where that stands right now, Landon, you can tell me. But he's done some good things in addition to sort of questionable things, or at least losing, again, the architects. And this is pretty traditional, though. You know, you have somebody come in. He's on the team for, what, 2 or 3 years at this point. You have somebody come in.
3 years, yeah.
Yeah, and they want to be, they want the team to reflect them, not the previous management or ownership. In this case, you know, Čekić is the guy who built everything there. When Hansen comes in and he buys the team, and yeah, he wants to be successful, but he also doesn't want it to be, well, Deloy Hansen owns the team, but really, this team was built by Dave Čekić, and they win games because of Dave. You know, that's an ego thing, and you don't get to be rich enough to buy a team because you have a small ego. So it's tough. Landy, you got anything else?
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. I get that sentiment, but at the same time, the team he bought was winning titles.
Yeah, no,
the team he has now is not.
They won one. They went to a Champions League final. Go ahead.
They made it decent into the playoffs last year. I mean, they've done pretty well. So I don't know. I get that sentiment, but at the same time, it seems like they're shooting itself in the foot. By the way, that USL stadium, that one is it's going forward. It's being built in West Valley, which wasn't where they wanted it originally, but it's not a bad place. Okay. They're still moving forward with that. So he's having some impact on there.
Yeah.
And I know he's talking a lot about bringing the women's team in right now as well, the NWSL.
Okay.
They've been talking about that for a while as well. Okay. So he's looking to make some changes, kind of put his stamp on things, which is great, but when you kind of start killing off your cash cow, it doesn't look great.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Thanks for the call, Landon. RSL definitely a team in transition, an organization in transition. Bill Manning, president of the club, has now moved on, and they're redoing everything. Bill in Rockland County, you're on the air. What's up?
Jason, how's it going? No rant today. Too much on Monday. I got a question for you, though.
Okay.
Zelenski Rangers.
Yeah.
You think MLS dropped the ball a couple of weeks ago if this guy goes to Rangers?
What, are you saying that MLS should have been chasing to bring him here?
Oh, if he can play in Rangers, I think any team in the MLS.
Well, sure, but there are other considerations, Bill. I mean, let's remember that the MLS schedule doesn't line up with the rest of, you know, with Europe. Let's remember that, you know, London to Glasgow is a short little flight. Coming across an ocean is something much different. You know, when you loan a player, you lose control. Now, you're supposed to get some promises. You're supposed to have some idea of how much they'll play. Otherwise, why you're loaning them? But I think that Zalalem is probably best served to stay in that general area. Yeah, maybe he could have ended up in MLS, but I'm not sure that that's something that Arsenal really would have considered anyway. Like at the very beginning, yeah, you know, it'd be great. It'd be fun. But where's he going to go and step right in and get the sort of playing time he might at Rangers?
Well, because when I heard they said a Scottish team, and I just assumed it was Celtic. And I thought to myself, I said, that's still a risky move because Celtic isn't in the Champions League. Which, by the way, for everybody, they're playing a home and away on Fox Sports 2 today against Monmouth. They won that series in the group stage of the Champions League. And I thought that would be risky because if Celtic doesn't make it to the Champions League, I'm not even sure if First Division Scottish is good for him. Scottish League is good for him.
Okay. I mean, I think it's more important. And we've actually got Andy on Twitter telling me Zalalem plays to the level of his teammates. We all know this. If he drops down to that level, that hurts his development, in my opinion. What do you mean we all know this? Do we really? Is that like something everybody knows, that Gedeon Zalalem only plays to the level of his teammates? I don't understand that. That's not something I don't get that. I don't know where Andy's got this universal belief. But I think that, as I sort of laid out with this, the move to Rangers, and Bill, you know, the other thing that's out there right now is that it might not end up being Rangers, that Fulham and Birmingham City and somebody else has some interest. If it does end up being Rangers, again, what for me, I think the silver lining is, whether you care about whether the quality is good enough or not, is that he's playing in a place where he's got to be part of a winning team. He's going to feel the pressure of needing to win. And this is probably time in his career where that's almost more important than the quality of the players around him. I mean, we know about his technical ability. He's got that already. I don't know that his form is going to drop off because his teammates aren't on Arsenal level. Certainly they're on, you know, whether or not they're on U21 Arsenal level. And he gets to be in a crucible that will either turn him into the kind of player who can handle that sort of pressure and he'll be ready to step into Arsenal's first team coming up soon, or we'll learn something about him and whether or not he needs more development at 18.
Yeah, I just hope we don't lose him because I think he's got a lot of talent. And I'm surprised to hear what that guy said, too, about he plays to the level of people around him. It's way too early to say that.
I think
young
so,
guy
too.
Like him, yeah. Sky's the limit for this guy. He has the right leadership.
Yep, I believe that you're correct on that, Bill. I appreciate the call, man.
Thanks, Dave.
There goes Bill in Rockland County. Let's check in with Nelly in Dallas. What's up, Nelly?
Hey, Jason. I know you were talking about MLS owners, and I don't know if you've brought up this topic up this week, but FC Dallas fans are not happy right now with FC Dallas owners. They're raising ticket prices on our supporter groups. One of my friends who's with the top supporter group for FC Dallas, the Beer Gardens, he told me he's not renewing next year because the owners are doubling up the prices on there. And he feels that, in a way, the owners are trying to kick out the Beer Guardians from the Beer Gardens by raising the prices. And I just don't think that's kind of reasonable. I mean, I know the team is hot right now, but we haven't brought a superstar to you know, make it valuable to raise the ticket prices, especially driving far away to go to the games.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see what you think about that.
I have heard about this. I did mention it briefly. The reports are that, as you said, they're raising ticket prices on the supporters groups. The math is a little fuzzy for me, but I think it's something at least 200%. Whether or not it really is about HSG trying to push certain supporter groups out or valuing, you know, families and this youth soccer crowd over the supporters or not, if that's the perception, that's a problem. That means they have a PR failure. And I've also heard, and I don't know if you know this as well, Nelly, but I've also heard that they've removed some of the parking lot space that the supporters were using for tailgates, which, you know, obviously American sports culture, tailgating is a big part of it. You use that as a recruiting tool. It's just a fun time. It creates a sense of community that soccer teams need in this country to get the supporters in to make the atmospheres that make the games better and more fun to go to, et cetera, et cetera. I hope they're not.
LA Galaxy this weekend and we have to pay for parking now. They're charging for parking. And in the past, parking was free.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some areas that you could park for free, but who knows? Maybe next year we're going to have to start paying for parking again.
You know, I'm looking at this.
Alienating your fans in a way.
You don't want to alienate people. And there needs to be communication. And maybe that's part of the problem as well. I'm looking at this Forbes list. Again, who knows how accurate this stuff is? MLS isn't the kind of league that gives this information out readily, but if you believe this, FC Dallas is solidly middle of the pack in terms of club value and in terms of revenue, although they are by Forbes estimation losing $3 million a year, or did lose $3 million last year. That may be the reason this stuff is happening. There may be a reckoning happening inside the halls of Fun Sports Group, and they're looking at their bottom line. They're saying, we can't afford to lose money anymore. Let's, you know, it's either cut a lot of places or do things like raise ticket prices and start charging for parking. Although I've also heard there are rumors that there's going to be some sort of stadium construction project or upgrade or something coming to Toyota Field. So I don't know what's going on in Dallas. And if we can find somebody to give me real insight, I would love to get it, Nelly.
Yeah, I have heard in the past that they want to put a roof in the stadium,
which would make that place a billion times better.
Upgrades on that.
If they actually did that, it would make that place 1,000 times better in terms of just not only because of the heat and the sun in Dallas and Frisco, but also because it would start to hold in some of the noise and give that place a real, actual, closed in, you know, atmosphere, a sense that it is a stadium with the opportunity to make noise and be to be a home field advantage for FC Dallas.
Yeah, Yeah, I think the first problem was building the stadium in Frisco, and I know I've talked about that before, but the driving distance, the traffic in the Metroplex, even this weekend, the city of Frisco does not know how to handle the traffic coming out of the stadium. This past weekend, LA Galaxy came in. It was sold out, a lot of cars. It took me almost an hour to get out of Frisco.
Wow.
And I don't think the city could have handled the traffic, where if you go to Arlington for Cowboys and Texas Rangers games, the police are there to handle the traffic well. And in Frisco, you can't. And for me, that has to drive almost 2 hours to go to an FC Dallas game. That kind of affects me being a season ticket holder, when before in the past I lived in Dallas, I could go because Frisco was closer. But if they were in Arlington or Dallas, or, you know, the original plan was to build a stadium in South Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the city of Dallas didn't want it. And they went to Frisco and they couldn't get any fans. And if they were raising the ticket prices because they signed a superstar, like Michael Essien was in the talks last year, they were talking to Drogba, I would understand. But just raising the ticket prices because all the team is hot and, you know, we need money. Well, I guess we're going to have to sell Fabian Castillo if I want my ticket cheaper.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a difficult thing. And you know, Rich, thanks for the call, Nelly. I appreciate it, man. There's Rich on Twitter's got, I'm assuming his tongue is in his cheek a little bit. MLS owners, public enemies number one. It's a fine line between calling for a change and protesting against ownership and railing against the ineffectiveness of the ownership and their unwillingness to spend money to compete, et cetera, all these things. And the fact that they are, if it's not for these owners, there is no league. If there's not for these owners, there are no teams. Fans have, we're talking about sports teams, and sports teams at some level are part of the public trust in addition to being wholly owned assets of, say, of rich guy number one, rich guy number two. And that's a very difficult sort of balancing act for the owners and for the fans to try to reconcile the fact that, yes, he owns the team. He can do what he wants. He can charge what he wants. He can pay for the players what he wants within certain rules. And this belongs to us, and we have a right to be upset if you are charging us too much money to come out, and it means I can't see my team, or you're not spending enough money to be competitive on the field. I don't know where that balance is. I think it's individual to each team. And clearly, when you have a record of failure, like in Chicago, and there's an anti-ownership movement there, you can justify that. You can understand that. When you see what happens in Philadelphia and some of the protesting against Sakevich and the ownership group in Philadelphia, you can sort of understand that. They are not meeting the standard that would come from the fact that they are this well-supported team. They should have been able to make something out of this. They've got this nice stadium. Again, are these owners failing in the sense that they are not doing what they're supposed to? They're not doing what they owe the fans? Or are they exercising their right to do nothing because they're owners and that's their team? I mean, we're out of the era of clubs. We never had that here in the U.S., but certainly in soccer. We're out of the era of clubs that are then part of the collective in the community, to the point where it ultimately comes down to the community choosing how things go. I mean, we've seen the efforts of MyFC and Nashville FC and some of these teams that are trying to be crowdsourced. That doesn't always work either. You got to have somebody making decisions. It's just, it's very difficult. All right, let's wrap up this edition of Soccer Morning on a Wednesday. Thanks to Ross Dunbar for stepping in and having a conversation with us about Bundesliga. Make sure you're checking out the Bundesliga on Fox. Only helps that we get more and more soccer in this country, certainly of top quality, and Bundesliga is that. All right, are we done? We're done. All right, go to backheel.com/store. Not only do we have these lovely mugs that have the Soccer Morning logo on it, we also have some pretty cool T-shirts. Trevor just put together a brand new Poku T-shirt that you absolutely must get your hands on. Go check it out, backheel.com/store. Make sure you're subscribing to the show as well, iTunes, is the best place to do that. Am I missing anything? Should I be plugging something else? I feel like I'm missing something. No? Yes? Maybe? All right, whatever. We're out of here. Thanks again for listening, guys. We'll talk to you on Thursday. Oh, yeah. New videos on the YouTube channel. Go subscribe. Soccer Morning on YouTube. And send us your best soccer show logos. Bye.
Did my invitations disappear? What happened to my heart?